Week 5 was everything we thought it would be and more. Well, I guess for some of us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the TBD College Football Show. With your host, I'm Mason. We're going to be looking at a Week 5 review today. It's going to be a good time. Before we start, I just want to say that the tagline to our show rings true in our day and age. And of course, our tagline is, no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team. We want you to know there's a Father in heaven who loves you. Jesus loves you. The Lord Jesus does love you and wants to have a relationship with you. If you have any questions about that, you can always reach out to us at TBDCFB on our TikTok or Instagram, or leave a comment right here on this YouTube video. So let's get into it. Starting with our pick records. This week, Joey in first place again after going 9-6 for week 5. He's now at 26-19. Isaac in second place, he goes 8-7, and he's now 23-22. And finally, myself in last place, I go 7-8, and I'm now in third place at 21-24. Yes, it was not a great week for myself. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to jump into an AP top 25 reaction, the elephant in the room with Georgia Bama. We're going to look at our own top 15, and we're going to look at our Matchbox matchups from last week to see which ones actually lit up and took off. But we're going to start with the elephant in the room. So obviously, I have a lot of thoughts on this game. I am a Georgia fan. I was going to wear black today in mourning, but I decided not to because we still got a long season ahead. But I'm going to give you the fan perspective first. I picked Bama for this exact reason. It's the same reason I've picked them the last 2 years to win, because they always find a way to beat us. They just do. Kirby, I think it's solidified now, especially in the fan base, because I think the fan base was like, yeah, Kirby, like, he beat him in the 2021 National Championship. You know, he's not a bad coach. He doesn't have a Bama problem. He has a Nick Saban problem. Well, now it's kind of solidified, especially in the fan base, that Nick Saban, or that Kirby Smart, does have a Bama problem. And that was solidified this past Saturday. It doesn't matter whether we're at home, what advantage we have, what players we have. I mean, we had better wide receiver core than we've had in years. We don't have the defensive playmakers, but we were at home. And a lot of Georgia fans felt that because we were at home, we were going to win that game. But I just knew we weren't. I don't know what it was, but we just lose when we play this team. We don't play our best game. For instance, I picked Oregon because of what Dan Lanning has proven to me. I asked this question on the podcast last week. With James Franklin, what has James Franklin done to prove to me that he can win a big game like this, even if it's at home? He's like 1-18 or 1-20, something like that, against top 25 opponents. He's not good against those teams. He hasn't done anything to prove it to me. But Dan Lanning with Oregon, Dan Lanning got his team to the Pac-12 championship. They didn't win, but they were there. He almost made the playoffs. He got his team to win the Big Ten in their first year last year, made it to the playoffs. Went undefeated in the regular season. Beat Ohio State at home. He wins in big games like this, which is why I picked him. But for Kirby, what has Kirby done to prove to me that he can win this game? Except for that one national championship. Every other time we've played regular season, or in another championship game like the SEC Championship, we've lost. Even in the 2017 season national championship, we lost to them. The second and 26, the fame. They always find a way to win. Always. And that's why I picked them. So that being said, for the fan base, Kirby, if you were going to win any game, it needed to be this one. And you let the fan base down. And I said, you know, not that Kirby needs to prove it to me last week, but once again, he proves me right. We don't beat Bama. It's only week 4, so the season's not over. We have a long way to go. I just think the thing about this game that stings so much is, one, who the loss was to and where the loss happened. Because we had a 30-game win streak at home. 33-game win streak at home. Gone. I was there the last time we lost. It was in 2019 to South Carolina when Rodrigo Blankenship missed a field goal in overtime. I was there. That was the last time we lost, and I think that's why it stings a little bit more. From the analyst perspective, I want to give you a sentence to give a picture of what I mentioned before. Alabama scored 0 points in the second half and still won. They scored 0 points in the second half and still found a way to win. The theme for this game, stupid mistakes and missed opportunities. Let's start with defensively, because a lot of people want to talk about the defense. If you want to beat us, you just have to pass the ball on us. We can't stop it. I mean, we outrushed them by like almost 200 yards, but they killed us through the air. And it's what they do every time. If you go back and look at the history of this game the last couple of years, especially, Alabama's wide receiver core is always good, and we can never stop the pass. That's the thing that we've never been able to do. The best year that we were able to do it was in 2023 when we had a guy like Javon Bullitt on our team and our safeties. We got KJ Bolden, but we're still just not able to stop the pass like we used to or like we were in 2023. Georgia, they let Bama convert 13 third downs, the most in a single game for Georgia in 33 seasons, and they did it in Sanford. And I think the issue is the same issue we had last year. We tried to be so aggressive. We blitzed every third down, and they converted every time. The same thing happened last year. Glenn Schumann said it last year. We tried to be too aggressive in the first half. We blitzed every third down, and what did they do? They cut us up, and they hit big plays down the field, got up early 28-0. I think if we would have just sank back in coverage on some of those third downs, sure, maybe they would have beat us, but maybe like we would have gotten some of those stops and gotten off the field and not let them have long, like, seven-minute drives on us the entire game. Or I guess I should say the first half, the entire first half. But when you look at the parallels from last year to this year, what did Bama do? Bama started out, like I said, 28-0. This year they get up 14-0. We're super aggressive on defense. We blitz every third down. It doesn't work. And then what do we do in the second half? We adjust. We play back into zone coverage with a little bit of man mixed in. And then we basically get a shutout in the second half. Now, last year, we didn't get a shutout in the second half like we did this year, but we held them to 3 until the Ryan Williams spinny spin touchdown. So this year, we give up 14 first half points. We get down 17-7 and then 17-14. And then at the end of the first half, we let them 2-minute drill us to death, and they go down, score a touchdown 24-14 at the end of the first half. So a lot of fans, they want to blame the defense, and I think it's a valid point, but only from the perspective that we shouldn't have to be playing from a deficit because we're too aggressive or we give up too many points in the first half, because we don't want to be playing from a deficit. But they shut out Bama in the second half. That's a big deal. That means that our offense had plenty of opportunities, which leads me to my next point as we move into the offense category for this game. I think the bigger issue than our defense in the first half was our offensive efficiency. We started the game on a 3-and-out, and we needed to be the first team to score in this game to keep momentum because we needed it on our side against a team like Bama because we knew that they were going to do what they did to us. But instead, we had no traction. We get down 14 early. We end up scoring 14 in the first, down by 10 to end it. Of course, we all know Nate Frazier, he fumbles inside the Georgia 15, which gives Bama 3 points, which, by the way, one goes back to our defense holding them to 3, which is a big win for us. But guys, 3 was also the margin of win for Alabama. Let's say, you know, anything can happen. You can play what if all day, right? But let's say Nate Frazier doesn't fumble right there. What if we go down, score 3 ourselves, and we don't give Alabama 3 right there? Maybe we don't lose this game. Mistake there. Defense, they get an incredible 4th-and-1 stop at the 50-yard line. We missed a wide-open touchdown to Taylen Taylor. We go 3-and-out. Wasted opportunity. Here's the point of controversy, the turning point in this game. It's the 4th-and-1 call. Every Georgia fan and Alabama fan knows what I'm talking about, and most fans who watch this game. This is something I've gone back and forth on. A lot of fans wish we would have just kicked the field goal. There was 14.5 minutes left in the game, or about 14 minutes left in the game when this happened. Who's to say Alabama doesn't go right down the field and score another touchdown? With the way that our defense was playing, and I mean, we did end up getting the ball back, so it didn't really matter anyway. We could have done something and didn't. I'll get there in a second. But I don't really mind the call. I don't really mind the decision to go for it on 4th-and-1. You want to be aggressive. You're at home, big time opponent. You've been down the entire game. You want to make a statement. I don't mind the decision to go for it. What I do mind is running Cash Jones off the right side where we're rotating 3 freshman tackles against 4-year veteran defensive lineman LT Overton. Why not run Chauncey Bowen, who is averaging like 8 yards a carry on a halfback dive? Why not run Gunnar Stockton, who almost got the first down on a quarterback power? And that goes back to Mike Bobo and his freaking play calling. That to me is on Mike Bobo. That's just a bad play call. Maybe, I know you got to save your timeouts in a game like this, but maybe get your personnel in there that you trust. Don't put it on Cash Jones, because then later in the game, we're driving down. We still have a chance to score a touchdown or a field goal to tie it. On 3rd-and-9, we throw a screen pass to Cash Jones, and he gets blown up. It's on Mike Bobo. Throw the ball downfield. Do the things that work. It was like Mike Bobo just is afraid to do the things that work. He gets so integrated into this run pass. I think it's why Nate Frazier fumbled. Because Nate Frazier is way better off the on a halfback stretch off the edge than he is running it up the middle. He tried to hit A-gap and fumbled. But the thing is, right before that, we tried to run the ball with him up the middle and got stuffed. Why go back to that? I asked my friend last night, if you're on second, like let's just say you were playing like college football 25 or 26, right? If you're on second and nine, what are you going to do? Probably not run the ball up the middle. Maybe a slant, maybe even a jet sweep if you got a fast enough guy. Maybe a halfback stretch if you're going to run the ball. But I'm not running back up the middle if it didn't work on first down. And I'm not an offensive coordinator, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But if it's me in that decision, I'm not running halfback dive with Nate Frazier again up the middle when it just got stuffed. Now, I will say, despite all that, we ran the ball extremely well. Like I said, I think we ran it for like 250 yards, which is, you know, insane considering how bad we were at running the ball last season, even though we had a guy like ETN. And another bright spot that I was pleasantly surprised with was our offensive line. Besides that one fourth and one just miss off the right side, Gunnar Stockton had a lot of time in the pocket. I think he got sacked like once. Offensive line played really well. Now, a lot of casual UGA fans, they started saying that we should fire Kirby. You people are just silly. Let me give you some information, by the way, because you people do not appreciate what we've had under Kirby Smart at Georgia. 108-20 record in 10 years. 20 games we've lost in 10 years. That's it. How many programs do you think would have loved to only lose 20 games in 10 years? 3 SEC championship wins, 7 appearances in those games. We were in the conversation. 2 national championships, 4 playoff appearances. We were in 3 of the national championships. We lost to Bama. We all know how that went. 3 straight undefeated regular seasons from 21 to 2023. Now, look, a lot of people want to say, well, your schedule. I understand, but this is the SEC. In 2022, Tennessee went to Alabama, scored 51 points on them. They come to us and only scored 13. Tennessee was a good team that year. We still played some pretty good teams. Did we play the best teams in the SEC? No. But we still held that record. 36 straight. Undefeated regular season games. That's Kirby Smart. You people are dumb. Anybody calling for the firing of Kirby Smart is dumb. Who we really need to fire is Mike Bobo for all the reasons I just mentioned. And I want to give all the credit in the world to Ty Simpson and the Alabama team. They Ryan Grubb, oh my gosh, that freaking throw to Caden Proctor was genius. Absolute genius. As a Georgia fan, absolute genius. We weren't stopping that guy. He was going to run his big freaking butt for a first down. We were not going to stop it. Because we just don't have the defensive players to do it this year. We don't have a Jordan Davis. We don't have a Jalen Carter. And I'm trying really hard not to take a lot of time on this segment. But it is what it is, and I had some thoughts. Ty Simpson, he's a guy. He's the guy, man. He looks really good. I was extremely impressed. He didn't make mistakes. He played a great game. Their O-line gave him time in the pocket. They made plays when it mattered, and we didn't. And I hate the stupid cliche of like, well, they didn't win the game. We lost it. But in a way, we did. We had every opportunity to score points in that game. We had the Taylen Taylor dropped touchdown. We had a drive going well at the end of the game that we could have kept going had we had good play calls. Could have kicked a field goal on the 4th-and-1. Could have had a better play call again on the 4th-and-1. Could have scored a touchdown there. Had every opportunity to do anything we wanted to do. But Bama stayed in control of that game. They played well, and they did what they needed to do to win. So all the credit in the world to them. And we got work to do. Last thing I'll say is it does suck to lose, but the season is definitely far from over. Remember this time last year, Georgia lost to Alabama. They beat us. And what was the game of the year? And Alabama turned right around and lost to Vanderbilt. And then guess who ended up winning the SEC championship? And that's not my prediction for this year. That's not what I'm saying. I mean, I think Georgia could win, but I mean, there's a lot of good teams that could win in the SEC this year. You're talking Ole Miss, LSU still has a chance, Oklahoma, Texas, technically, I guess. We'll see how they play against Florida. Alabama, for sure. There's a lot of different ways it could shake out, but the season's far from over. All right, the Indiana-Illinois situation. So the question we had last week was, is Indiana that good or is Illinois that bad? Well, we kind of got some answers. We're going to start out with Indiana versus Iowa. The game went how you'd expect. Indiana was efficient on offense. Iowa was efficient on defense. We talked about this, high-powered offense versus high-powered defense. But Iowa was efficient on defense, except when it mattered. If you watch the game, you know. Indiana held Iowa to 13 points, but there's no surprise there. Iowa couldn't pass much. They had to depend on their run game. Illinois, they beat USC. Wow. Did not see that coming. Illinois, as we found out, they have zero defense, though. They got up on USC by double digits and let them come all the way back. And Illinois won on a last-second field goal. So what's the answer to the question? What actually happened two Saturdays ago? I think the answer is just that Indiana is definitely a solid team with a really solid offense and a really good defense, and Illinois has zero defense and had no answer offensively. And the other thing is, it's college football. Stuff like two Saturdays ago between Illinois and Indiana, it just happens. It's what happens in our sport. We've seen crazier things. It was wild that Indiana was able to score that many points on Illinois. I also think they were making a statement. You know, you feel disrespected. You're top 25, but you feel like you are a top 10 team. You get a top 10 team come to your building, and you just turn it on and make them look silly. It happens. I think that's what happened here. LSU versus Ole Miss. Somebody in the comments last week said that we don't know ball. Fair. We all picked LSU to win. I picked LSU because I thought they were going to play well defensively, and I thought this was finally going to be the game that Garrett Nussmeier turned it on, and I didn't think that Ole Miss was that good. And I'll tell you what, I was wrong. So, sir, that called us out. You're right. I didn't know. Didn't watch enough of Ole Miss. I thought, hey, they struggled against Kentucky. Only big win is against Tulane. I don't think they're only favored by 1.5 at home. I think LSU is going to win. But the thing is, I think their defense did play well. LSU's defense did play well. They got two turnovers. It's just hard to play defense when your offense sucks. Nussmeier, still turnover prone, just not a good decision maker. And, you know, he was the number one preseason SEC quarterback in those rankings when they came out. And I said that was silly. I did not agree with that at all. And I guess I was right. LSU, they still can't run the ball. O-line cannot block. I think it was like three sacks on Nussmeier, and he threw a pick. Just not good. I was impressed by Ole Miss's defense. I still have some questions there because I want to see if, you know, LSU's O-line is that bad or if their defense is that good. And Ole Miss, man, they may have found themselves a quarterback in Trinidad Chambliss, 314 pass yards for one touchdown. He dotted LSU up so bad. And Ole Miss, they have a tough stretch, but it seems like Kiffin's got himself a really good team this year, which, you know, a lot of us didn't think because they lost Jackson Dart. They lost a lot of guys to the portal on defense and on offense. And to the draft. So he's got a good team. They're looking good, but they do still have a tough stretch. Oregon, Penn State. I kind of already touched on this one, but it was a back and forth game the whole time. Oregon gets up 17-3. Penn State scores 14 straight to force overtime at the end of the game. Penn State, they score a touchdown. Both teams score a touchdown. Oregon, they go down, score a touchdown. The second overtime, miss the two-point conversion. And Penn State, they're trying to drive for it. Drowler puts a pass up, and it gets picked by Oregon. And that's the clutch moments, and Dan Lanning was amped. He was amped, man. And I don't blame him. Big time. You got to go on the road. You lose like 3 hours because of the time change. Play a night game in one of the probably the loudest stadium in that specific game because it was the Penn State wideout. And you win in overtime. Big, big win for Dan Lanning there. I'm so glad I picked that. I know Isaac picked Penn State because it was the wideout. But like I said, what has James Franklin done to prove to me that he can win this game? Nothing. Go Ducks. Sco Ducks, I guess. Yeah, Sco Ducks. And go Dan Lanning. Georgia fan. So I love Dan Lanning big time. So heck yeah, man. All right, we're going to talk about the AP Top 25 for a second because some of this stuff is just absolutely ridiculous. I actually don't mind 25 through 21. You've got Arizona State, Virginia, BYU, Illinois, and Notre Dame. Michigan at 20 is fine. Missouri at 19 is fine. Florida State dropped 10 places. They're in 18th now. If Virginia is that big of a win that they get skyrocketed into 24th place from not being ranked, why did they drop so much? Georgia Tech down one. I understand they got into a shootout with Wake Forest. Wake Forest almost locked to Kennesaw State. They're not that great of a team, and they have Robbie Ashford at quarterback. Vanderbilt up two spots to 16. I think they should be higher. It's because of the logo. That's why. They're 5-0. They've got a big win against South Carolina. Why are they only at 16th? Why is Tennessee, who has a loss, ahead of them? Makes no sense. Iowa State at 14, because of the logo, should be higher. 5-0. Big wins against Kansas State and Arizona. LSU at 13, I'm fine with this. Now, here's where we kind of get into some issues. Georgia at 12. I know I'm a Georgia fan, so just stick with me. Their one loss is to now number 8 Alabama. Texas is 3-1. Biggest wins are Sam Houston, UTEP, San Jose State. One loss to Ohio State. What in the world is Texas doing ranked at 9th and Georgia being ranked at 12th? Again, I know I'm biased because I'm a fan. But you've also got Texas Tech at 11. I'm fine with that. If they want to rank these teams above us, I'm fine with that. But why would you rank Texas, who's done nothing up there? Indiana at 8, fine with. Probably should be higher. Penn State at 7. Biggest wins, Villanova, FIU, and I think Florida Atlantic. Why are they even ranked in the top 10 still? I understand they got into a shootout with Oregon, who is a top 10 team, and they did it at home. But what else have they done? Why are they in the top 10? A&M at 6, fine with me. Oklahoma at 5, fine with me. Ole Miss at 4. They jumped 9 spots because they beat LSU, who has very little offense and got into a shootout with Clemson. And we know how bad Clemson is. I don't know that I would have put Ole Miss that high, but they're undefeated, so I can't. I don't want to dispute it. But my main problems are Penn State and Texas being in the top 10. What, just because of who they are and who they lost to and who their brand is? To me, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no reason Texas or Penn State, they have no business being in this top 10 at all. I don't mind Georgia being at 12, but really, who have we lost to? Alabama. But who have we beat? Tennessee. Who's the top 25 team? Those two teams don't have a top 25 win. They've literally only beat group of five schools. They do not have a power four win. And we do. But yeah, we get the shaft because we lost to Alabama at home by 3 points. AP, man, they just don't even, I mean, look, I mean, at least the CFP, at least they actually discuss these things together. But these voters do not watch. They don't. We're going to hit our top 15 here in a second. But first, I want to hit our Matchbox matchups. So this is a new segment we started last week. These are matchups that are sitting in the Matchbox waiting to be lit. They could be duds or they could light up like a match. So let's see which one's lit up like a match. Florida State, Virginia. Back and forth battle. We go into overtime. I did not think this was going to happen. I thought Florida State would have their number and maybe a little bit of a trap game because they got Miami this week. But man, that one was a good game. We all picked Florida State. We all got it wrong. TCU, Arizona State was back and forth. TCU actually had a 10-point lead up until the fourth quarter, and then they gave it away at the end, and Arizona State ends up taking the win. That one was good. Notre Dame, Arkansas. I would probably still call that a dud, but we had to talk about it because, man, they beat the ever-loving piss out of Arkansas. Notre Dame proving that they are still a really good team. A lot of people were like, well, why is Notre Dame still ranked? This right here. This is why Notre Dame is still ranked. Because they're a good freaking football team. They went on the road in the SEC, and they just, I mean, destroyed Arkansas. Sam Pittman got fired, by the way. He's gone. Bobby Petrino, offensive coordinator, is now interim head coach. Duke versus Syracuse, kind of another dud, but the thing is, we were like, why is Duke favored by 6.5? And they beat the ever-loving crap out of Syracuse. Man, this sport is so weird, is it not, guys? Ohio State, they go on the road to Washington, ended up being a pretty good back-and-forth game in the beginning, and then, you know, Ohio State run away with, I think it was like 26-14, final score. Auburn versus Texas A&M. This one was actually kind of back-and-forth for a while, which is surprising. Auburn, second road game in a row. They finished the fourth quarter with -1 offensive yards. They were 0-for-11 on third down. Wow. Jackson Arnold, still the same old Jackson Arnold. Offensive line giving him all day in the pocket. Refuses to get rid of the football. He'd just rather try to run and get, and he gets sacked. Tennessee versus Mississippi State. This is the second biggest one behind Florida State, Virginia. But this one was a back and forth battle all the way into like the last like minute of the fourth quarter. It was a good game. Mississippi State almost had them. Just couldn't get it in on fourth in goal and in overtime. And they lost. But it was a good game nonetheless. And finally, Arizona versus number 14, Iowa State. Iowa State, obviously, they won this game. We knew they would. Arizona's a good team, but they weren't taking down Iowa State. All right, now we're going to go through our top 15, our TBD top 15. Going to do this really quickly, but we're going to start at 15, Tennessee. They got one loss to Georgia. Played a really tough road game. Their offense still looks really good. Defense is having some issues. They need to get their starting cornerbacks back. And once they do that, I think they'll be looking good. But Tennessee at 15. Number 14, Penn State. Literally, it's the same thing I said for the AP. Who have they beaten? They lost to Oregon at home. Why should they have any business being anywhere near the top 10? They shouldn't. And just so you guys know, we dropped Texas out of our top 15, too, for the same reason. Who have they played? Who have they beaten? Nobody? Exactly. Number 13, LSU. Big road win against Clemson. Obviously, it's starting to look worse week to week. Defense is still good and only lost to is to a top 10 rival at home by single digits against Ole Miss. So that's why. Number 12, Iowa State. Undefeated. Big wins over Kansas State and Arizona. They probably should be ranked higher, but I want them to get a bigger signature win. That's what we feel with Iowa State right now. Yes, they are undefeated, but we want to see them get a bigger signature win. Texas Tech, big win over Utah. Keep proving it at 11. We just saying kind of the same thing. These are the two front runners right now for us in the Big 12, Texas Tech and Iowa State, both undefeated, but we want to see them prove it. Number 10, Vanderbilt, undefeated, big win over South Carolina. We're looking for them to continue their streak against Bama this week. And we don't care about that Vanderbilt logo. We think they look good. We think they look like a good team. And so someone knocks them off, which very, very well happened this Saturday. We're going to keep them in the top 10. Number 9, Georgia. They still have that big win over Tennessee. The team looks balanced. Some issues on defense in the first half in games, but played really well in the second half versus Alabama. We've already seen Gunnar Stockton prove himself. We know he's a good quarterback. We know he makes good decisions, zero turnovers against Alabama. They did lose to Alabama, but they still looked good. Number 8, Alabama. Big win over Georgia and Sanford Stadium. Offense looks much improved, obviously, but they still have that one loss to Florida State. Number 7, Ole Miss. Big-time rivalry win versus LSU. They're looking very balanced. They're undefeated. We want to see them keep going. Number 6, Indiana. Ridiculously huge win over Illinois and a good win over Iowa on the road. Let's keep looking and see what they look like as well. Number 5, Oklahoma. Big wins over Michigan and Auburn. They look good on both sides of the ball. Coming off a bye week, going to play Kent State this weekend. Won't have John Mateer, but I don't care. Their defense is still really good, and we got them at 5. Number 4, Texas A&M. Got that big win over Notre Dame, who just beat the crap out of Arkansas. So that's why we got them there. Number 3, Oregon. Huge win in the wideout at Penn State. Defense coming in clutch in overtime. Number 2, Ohio State. Biggest win is over Texas. They look less impressive than they initially did, obviously. But big win on the road at Washington. This top 4 or top 3, you could literally do it any way you want. You could go Oregon, Ohio State, Miami like we have it. You could go Oregon, Miami, Ohio State. You go Ohio State, Miami, Oregon. They're just all good, and they're all undefeated. It's going to be tough, but at number 1, we do have Miami. They have 2 AP top 25 wins, got a big win over in-state rival Florida, and now they're going to have a big game against another in-state rival, Florida State. And I can tell you, Florida State wants that win, and if Miami gets it, I can pretty much guarantee you they're going to stay atop our top 15 next week. But that is our TBD top 15. Y'all, the week 6 slate, not going to be as good. However, it's still going to be pretty good. We got our preview and prediction episode on Thursday. Come back for that. Week 5 was a monster. It was crazy. We had a ton of stuff. If you feel like I rushed through this, it's because I kind of did. We had so much to get to this week. Really looking forward to this Saturday, more college football. Like I just said, come back and join us on Thursday as we do our preview and prediction show for week 6. And always remember, no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team. Just know there's a Father in heaven who loves you and wants to have a relationship with you. And if Jesus is not your savior, I recommend you make him that. It's one of the key foundations of TBD CFB. We love the Lord Jesus. We want everyone to know him. We want all of our listeners to know him. If you have any more questions about that or about the gospel, which is that Jesus died for you, he loves you, and he can save you if you let him, please reach out to us at TBD CFB on our socials, TikTok and Instagram. Leave a comment on this YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to talk to you. We're praying for our listeners. We appreciate you guys listening. Hey, if you like the video, share the video with a friend. Subscribe to the channel because we post awesome content all the time. And leave a comment on this video. Tell me if you think I'm crazy. It's okay. I can handle it. Just like the guy, the Ole Miss fan who said we didn't know ball. It's all good. And head over to our socials, like I mentioned, at TBDCFB. We post a lot of fun content over there, especially on TikTok, that you're sure to love if you love college football. Once again, we appreciate y'all listening, and we'll see you on Thursday.